Hello and welcome to the Film Pulse Podcast. This is episode number 503. My name's Adam Patterson. With me today, we've got Kevin Rakestraw. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. This week on the show, we'll be reviewing You'll Never Find Me, which is streaming on Shudder right now. We'll also be going over some of watching on the watch list and this week's new releases in theaters, VOD and Blu-ray. Thank you so much for joining us this week. I think we can just get straight on into the review. We're talking about You'll Never Find Me. This is directed by Indiana Bell and Josiah Allen. I have a synopsis here. Patrick, a strange and lonely resident, lives in a mobile home at the back of an isolated caravan park. After a violent thunderstorm erupts, a mysterious young woman appears at his door, seeking shelter from the weather. The longer the night wears on and the more the young woman discovers about Patrick, the more difficult she finds it to leave. Soon she begins to question Patrick's intentions, while Patrick begins to question his own grip on reality. Kevin, we'll start with you. What were your initial impressions of You'll Never Find Me?
Oh, man. That last bit right there. Begins to question his own grip on reality. That's where this movie lost me.
Big time, yeah.
In some ways, it feels like a throwback. Like, this type of, narrative twist seemed to be, super prevalent, in the, 80s, 90s, early 2000s. And then it just kind of died off, which I appreciated that it died off. So this feels, slightly like a throwback to one of those types, but it lost me there. But up until that point, I gotta say, this movie is, exceptionally well made.
Mm-hmm.
It was taut as hell. The sound design, whoever did all the sound work, the mixing, just everything about it is just phenomenal.
Yeah. I have
writing's
that
great. Yeah. Performances, everything. Everything about it is great. Just that narrative twist just undoes a lot of it.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you. I have written down here to highlight the sound because it is phenomenal. It's one of the first things you notice about the movie, and it is so prevalent throughout, and it is the sound is just at the forefront of this movie, and it is so well done. It's quite good. I would say award worthy. This movie, just the sound is top notch. I completely agree with you. Everything up until the final act, when things get revealed, I feel like it just completely falls apart. And it's one of those movies where you can kind of see it going that way, but the whole time you're just really hoping that it doesn't go that way, because everything up until that point, the buildup is so strong, and it's an incredibly tense movie. It's suspenseful. It's a slow burn, but the tension just keeps ratcheting up as, these two have these kind of sparse conversations, and you're slowly being drip fed information. And it's a great buildup, but unfortunately even the poster kind of telegraphs where this is heading, and it's unfortunate. Because I feel like it just really unravels a lot of the goodwill that this movie gives you in the beginning and throughout. It just sucks. It really sucks.
It does. It really does. Because, man, it is doing so well. And it has those little pieces where you're like, oh, this could go somewhere very interesting. And I really hope that it does. But you're right. Once it starts to unveil some of these things, you're just like, ah, damn it. Why? Why did we go that route? Literally, yep. Anything would have been better, I think.
And the thing is, when the kind of tension and intrigue is at its height, you could see it going, there are a couple deviations where you're like, oh, maybe, because this mysterious woman, she seems to have secrets of her own, and is it gonna go take this turn, because you're suspicious of the guy from the beginning, but then you start to think, well, maybe she's hiding some things, maybe she's the perpetrator here. But it's unfortunate because it's you could see a few different outcomes, but like it turns out to be the most obvious and disappointing one, which is like kind of the worst.
Yeah, and then also, like, not only that, but then on top of that, once you start to, like, now knowing what you know, and then kind of going back to some of the stuff that happened prior, it just, like, a lot of it doesn't work.
No.
Because it's like, nope. You know, there's early signs early on where it's like, oh, she knows something. Like, she seems to have some inclination or some sort of knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then once it's revealed, it's like, well, she should have a lot more knowledge.
Like, she should have all of the knowledge.
Every single piece of knowledge that you could have, you should have. So it just kind of feels weird. And then also on top of that, just the what it represents and everything, it's just like, I don't feel like that person would have that. Which is kind of hard to discuss without, like, because everything hinges on that twist, right? And it's kind of hard not to talk about with revealing that twist. But I just don't see that person having that issue. You know what I mean?
I do, yeah. I think maybe we'll just do a very short spoiler discussion at the end of this. So people who want to hear, or people who saw it can, so that we don't have to tiptoe around that twist. But yeah, I think we'll do a quick spoiler talk and throw it at the end of the show. But before we get into that, was there anything else like non-spoiler related that you wanted to get into?
No, I just want to reiterate the sound design. Like, it's just incredible. Between the storm and then mixing like the torrential downpour and the wind gusts and the howling winds with like
the creaks, floorboards creaking. Yeah. The creaks and, like, and the cracks and the
whispering, like you kind of hear voices, you know, all that stuff. It's just it, like the atmosphere in this movie is just incredible, and the writing's well done, the performance is well done, like everything about this is just so good. It just really disappointing.
Yep, it's almost like almost like the movie High Tension all over again, where it was just so deeply embedded into it and then just falls apart.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and give it a score. This is so hard for me because I really hated the end. Like, I just really did not like the end. And, it, you know, part of it was like, because it was so strong, it was like one of those things where, like, okay, you're really gonna have to stick this landing, you know, like there's a lot of movies that do that, specifically horror movies that have a really interesting kind of hook. And
oh yeah, and especially when you do the slow burn approach, yeah, you're like, man, you really got to pay this off because we really haven't been doing a whole lot for quite some time.
Yeah. I still want to kind of give it a light recommend. So, like, I still feel like I need to get it over that, like, threshold. So, of, like, if you're going by Rotten Tomatoes measurements, like, I'd still want to give it probably a fresh rating. So, like, I would probably give it, like, a 6 feels too strong for me. But I think that I would... Probably, yeah, I think I'll give it a 6 just to keep it on that like fresh territory.
I think I would probably have to agree. Like, yes, I'm with you on the man, I really, really did not like where it went. But like I said, everything up until then, like, this is an exceptionally well-made film. So much so that I'm very excited to see what they do next. Because it's like, man, this movie alone is like 80% of it. It's just top-notch stuff.
And also, the other thing of note is that even after they, you know, do the reveal and it, you realize what's going on and it's like, ugh, oh man. Like, it still has pretty strong visual, like a strong visual component. And like all of those technical aspects are still there. It's just, you know, after it's just, it doesn't hit as hard after you realize or after the reveal occurs. So, yeah.
But there's definitely craft in what's happening here. Like,
yeah,
cinematography wise, framing, lighting, just everything about it.
Absolutely. So, all right, that's You'll Never Find Me. Again, if you want to listen to some spoilers, just tune in to the end of the show. We'll tack it on there. All right, let's talk about some more watching. I think it's your turn this week, Kevin.
Oh, I'm going to hit you with the Carl Franklin.
Uh-oh.
Movie from 1992, One False Move. Bill Paxton, Billy Bob Thornton, Cinda Williams, Michael Beach. Man, this is written by Billy Bob and Tom Epperson. Billy Bob's got a nice ponytail in this. And man, is this movie just... so good. So fucking good. Performances are great. The screenplay alone is just... like, it's so lean and just straight to the point. Perfect amount of tension. You know, the escalating of these criminals, where it's Ray Malcolm and Pluto, played by Billy Bob, and Michael Beach. Michael Beach is, man, he is ruthless. He likes his knife. He likes to stab people. I mean, he really likes to stab people. Like, he loves it. And they rip off some drug dealers, and then they're, you know, going across the country trying to meet up with this guy to sell the drugs, and then they're going to go their separate ways. But Cinda Williams has to stop off in, I think it's Arkansas, like, to see her family, and that's where Bill Paxton is. He's the sheriff of this little small town, and LAPD come out to kind of help him, and Bill Paxton gets all, he's kind of jazzed up, man. It's like, this is the big times, so he's a little bit too jazzed up, a little overzealous. He wants to make these LAPD guys happy. And man, just everything about this is just phenomenal. The cinematography, the pacing, the screenplay, performances, just everything. Can't recommend this highly enough.
I love Paxton's character in this, where he's like, you know, he plays this small town sheriff so well.
He does, because he's kind of dumb. But at the same time, he's not, you know what I mean?
He's just such a people pleaser.
Yeah.
Like he's just such a friendly kind of Barney Fife type. Well, but he's like smarter than a Barney Fife.
Yeah. Like he's smart for the area that he's working in. If you take him out, like if you were to, cause he wants to go to LA, you know, right, and join the force there, it's not going to work. You know, but Star City, Arkansas, he's the smart guy.
Yeah. Yep. Big fish in a small pond.
Correct.
Damn, I love this. I loved this movie too. We covered this on the 90s podcast a while back. This movie's fantastic.
So good. And I kind of forgot, like, I haven't watched Billy Bob in something in a long time, but man, Billy Bob was just on fire back then. It's like he could do no wrong.
I know, like he was pretty great.
It's like he just understood movies, like at a molecular level.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, cool. That's One False Move. Check it out. Absolutely, totally worth it. One that's not really worth it is Roadhouse. This is directed by Doug Liman. That's right. I saw the new Roadhouse. It's two words, not just one word. That lets you know that it's different. Roadhouse.
Roadhouse.
Different. And that's sort of a joke. It's sort of a joke in the movie itself.
No.
It's really? A roadhouse, and the name of the roadhouse is Roadhouse.
Wait, but when it's the name of the roadhouse, is it one word, Roadhouse?
No, or it's two words.
Okay.
So it's a roadhouse, one word. But the name of the roadhouse is Road Space House. That's the joke. That's the joke. That's the gag. What you have here is Jake Gyllenhaal playing this ex-UFC fighter who is, you know, he's he's down on his luck. He did something terrible, and he is sort of punishing himself for it. He's doing like these kind of underground bare knuckle fights, and then he gets a job offer from this woman who owns this roadhouse in the Florida Keys. And basically she's like, you know, we're just having all kinds of issues with this gang of ruffians who comes in every night, trashes the place, starts fights, etc. Looking, we need to hire somebody to take care of this place. So he reluctantly agrees. That's kind of the movie. There's more things that get uncovered where, like, you know, they're trying to, this gang is being brought in to try to get them to sell the roadhouse because they want to build this like condo or something on the land. It's bad. The writing is bad. The action choreography is way too stylized. I mean, this is a movie that is supposed to be like just kind of this brutal, you know, bar fights, you know, just scrappy bar fights. But what you have here is like really hyper stylized, very meticulously choreographed fight scenes that are akin to, you know, John Wick or one of these other, you know, modern action movies, the Bourne movies, whatever. And it just doesn't really fit within, I think, the vibe of a movie like, yeah, Roadhouse.
I was wondering, because even the trailer when he like slaps the guys, I was, mm-hmm, like, this looks bad. Like, that's,
yeah,
this does not look good.
The fight scenes are not, I mean, they're well shot and everything. I just don't think that they mesh well with this. So you have Conor McGregor in here as sort of, he's like the heavy, he's like kind of the main henchman guy. He's this like really unhinged fighter. And he's bad in it. They shouldn't have got, I get why they got Conor McGregor. Like, he kind of fits within the theme of the movie, but like, he's just not very good in it. He's not as bad as I kind of expected him to be, but his character is just awful. Like, he's such a dope in it. The one positive that I will say is that I liked Jake Gyllenhaal's performance a lot, and I liked his character a lot. It's not the type of character that you would expect. He's like kind of goofy in a lot of ways. Like, he's super charismatic, very funny. Like, he's always cracking jokes and stuff. Really good character. And Gyllenhaal did a really great job with the role. That's really the only positive that I can say about it. The rest of it is just pretty generic stuff. So, can't recommend Roadhouse, but if you do want to see it, it's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Didn't expect much.
Yeah, no, I mean, we kind of knew that going in. The only other thing I saw was Dream Scenario.
All right, yeah.
Nicolas Cage. This was a disappointment. This was a letdown for me. I will give it the premise of this is phenomenal. It's just such a great fucking idea. But, mm-hmm, what they use that idea to kind of, you know, discuss on screen just did not work for me. And it just all kind of, like, once it got past the, like, you know, he shows up in everyone's dreams, right? And once that's kind of established and he tries to kind of capitalize on that, it just all started going downhill for me. Because just where they took it just didn't work. It didn't feel like it had anything new to say, you know. But that, like, that lead up, the you know, the eking out that premise and the build up to that premise was fantastic. It just unfortunately fell apart after that. But I will say Nicolas Cage is fucking great in it.
Mm-hmm.
God, just, it's,
I loved his character.
He's so good in this. So good in this. I wish it was just a little bit more. Just wish it had something different to say. It just felt kind of dated in a way.
Yeah, I mean, how many movies have we seen that deal with like internet fame and cancel culture, yeah, at this point and stuff like, yeah, that.
and like meme, you know, memification of everything. Yeah. Just especially when it got to the what was it, the
like nightmares?
The young woman that was
fantasized,
and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, here we go.
Yeah. That's another one that I feel like didn't quite stick the landing for me.
Yeah, just it was so close though. It's such a great idea, you know?
It is. It is a great idea. I loved the beginning.
And that's the other thing that gets me. Like, not only is it a great idea, but like literally, who would be the best fucking actor?
Exactly.
It's Nicolas Cage, you know? And it just like you have all the fucking pieces. Like they're there. But it just didn't work.
Yeah. All right, that's Dream Scenario. The only other one that I'll mention is Out of Darkness. This is directed by Andrew Cumming. This is a movie about... it takes place in the Stone Age, and you got this group of nomadic people who are trying to find an area that is fertile, that they can like plant and make, you know, just live. They're just trying to live. They're trying to eat. There's no food, cold. There's dangers lurking everywhere, and they're heading, I don't know, they're heading west or somewhere in order to find a better place to live. And on their way, they end up going up against what they believe to be some sort of creature who starts to kill them one by one. And I didn't like this movie. I will say that it looks like visually incredible. Like the cinematography. I mean, like 90% of the cinematography is just the location. I believe it was shot in like Scotland. And so you have these like really lush forests, and like it almost looks like Iceland, where you have these kind of rolling hills and moss and stuff like that. So it looks great. I mean, it is a very great locations, etc. But the movie itself just didn't quite work for me. It just wasn't very interesting. Like that, it was just, you know, they speak this like made up language, and it just like the characters are not particularly interesting or endearing. And then when you discover what the creatures are, you're just like, oh, okay, well, I kind of expected that. I was hoping that they were going to like throw a curveball at you, and it was going to be like raptors or something. Like it was going to be dinosaurs, you know?
Yeah,
it was like a creationist take on the Stone Age, but no. You know, it's violent. There's some kind of disturbing sequences, but overall, I was a little bit meh on it. I think it's kind of forgettable. Well shot, but you know, other than that, nothing great here. Out of Darkness.
Out of Darkness. I do want to talk about one more thing, just in case I don't finish this movie. Because I started this movie, right? I started a movie, if you can remember this, called Calamity of Snakes.
I remember, yes, I do remember Calamity of Snakes.
So finally, this is on Tubi, 1982, Calamity of Snakes. I gotta watch this thing, you know, it's available, you gotta fucking do it. Alright, so it starts off that they're doing construction for this like luxury apartment complex, right? And the head honcho shows up at the work site, and he's like, I need this done like in 2 weeks. And the foreman's like, dude, we can't do that. Like, you have to cut safety corners. Like, it's just not possible. Like, it's gotta be a secure, safe building. And he's like, fuck that. No, cut corners. We just got to get this luxury apartment done. So as they're like having their discussion, they're digging out, you know, this like rectangle hole, right? And everyone starts freaking out. They're like, there's so many snakes fucking everywhere. And, you know, boom, cut shot over top. The whole thing's just filled with snakes and eggs. Just so many fucking snakes everywhere. just writhing on top of each other. And first thought I have is, they delivered. That is a calamity of snakes. You know what I mean? Like, it says it on a tin, and they delivered within the first 5 minutes, right? So things are looking good. Now, things take a turn, because they're like, everyone grab something, kill these snakes. And it's just real live snakes, and they like start killing snakes for like a full 3 minutes. And like, they're just literally like, killing snakes.
That's, I hate that.
So it's like snakes, it's usually like one snake, and it's just a guy hitting it with like a shovel or a spade, cutting it up, just smashing it, blood everywhere. And you're like, okay, like this is kind of difficult to watch. And it's intercut with the other scene. It's just the guy using the backhoe to just smash the snakes in the rectangle hole. Blood fucking everywhere. Like, I was seriously getting sick to my stomach because it was just that for like 3 minutes nonstop. And I was like, I don't know if I can take this anymore. Like, I'm going to throw up. This is fucking disgusting. And I don't even really like snakes. But I finally get past that. And I'm like, okay, well, hopefully that's just that they get you hooked in. Snakes are going to get their revenge. So I'm going to hang in there. Well, then like a scene or two later is like a guy just like skinning a snake alive and just like fucking gutting it and shit. And I was just like, I can't. I just turned it off. I was like, I can't do it.
That's, I hate that shit. Like, you know, that's like the like Cannibal Holocaust and Cannibal Ferox movies where it's like, you know, they'd be decent movies if it didn't include animal, real animal killing in there. That's just, you know, for shock value. That's just unnecessary.
It is. And it was like, it was physically making me sick. But that, I am like, they get their revenge because they don't kill all the snakes and the snakes get their revenge. So I kind of was like, is it over? Can I go back? Because I would like to see the snakes kill them now. I feel like the snakes.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, the snakes probably aren't going to kill everybody. So, you know.
Probably not.
But the humans probably win in the end. Well, that's unfortunate.
Well, it does say that soon thousands of killer snakes under the lead of a giant boa kill all the new inhabitants. Even a snake master can't stop them. So maybe they
do get their revenge.
Do we?
I feel like there's that with movies like that, they should have just a warning at the beginning or something that's like, hey, you know, just so you know, there's going to be some real animal killing in this movie.
Yeah, and I kind of should have known going into it, 1982. But I was hoping that it would be like, oh, terrible effects, like rubber snakes. You're just like kind of laughing, like, look at that.
I wouldn't have thought that with this movie, because this is what, Hong Kong? Is it a... mm-hmm. Yeah. If it was Italian, I'd be like, yeah, for sure. there's gonna be some snake killing for sure. But
yeah,
I don't know. I guess with Hong Kong cinema, I don't associate real animal killing with that. Maybe it's just I haven't seen enough horror films from that era, Hong Kong. Anyway, that's unfortunate. Calamity of snakes.
If you can handle that.
If you're okay with it. It's like, what was that, Wake and Fright? There's the kangaroo killing scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, it's so unfortunate because, like, I love Wake and Fright. But, like, that one scene, man, it just... That's like... I mean, I guess I could just, like, skip over it if I wanted to rewatch it, but it's unfortunate. All right, let's take a look at what we have in theaters this week. We got In the Land of Saints and Sinners. That's a new Liam Neeson one. The thing is, like, I'm sure that some of these Liam Neeson ones are decent, but the fact is he's dropping them continues. To drop them so frequently that you never know, because they all kind of look the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least with Nicolas Cage, you see a trailer, you can kind of gauge which one of the Nicolas Cage type movies it's going to be, you know?
Yeah.
But with Liam Neeson, you just never know. You could probably say the same about Jason Statham too, actually.
Yeah, but
I think never know which way it's going to go.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't watch either of them really, but at least to me, Statham is more of a watchable person.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yep, we also have Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire.
This looks...
We talked about this before on the show. It looks absolutely dog shit.
It sure does.
Like the poster, how they gave, it's like Godzilla has this like kind of pink mohawk, like his spines are, they made him pink. He's like a badass. It just looks so awful. Like the CG looks terrible. Like just watch Godzilla Minus One. Like that one will give you your kaiju fix.
But I also love the fact that they include three helicopters.
Oh, yeah.
Like, those three helicopters are going to they're going to help out so much.
They're leading they're leading them. They're leading Godzilla and Kong, because Godzilla and Kong are, they for some reason need helicopters to be like, which way do we go here? Where's the monster that we need to kill? Ugh, awful. Just awful. Moving on to VOD. We have The Oath coming out. We have Wages of Fear on Netflix. And yes, this is a remake of the original Wages of Fear, which is which in and of itself got a remake with Sorcerer. I can't imagine that this one could be anywhere on the same level as either the original or Sorcerer, because both of those films were absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Sorcerer for me is a 10 out of 10, but, and The Wages of Fear is also like maybe a 10 out of 10 for me. So this remake, I don't know. I believe it might be French, but I'll be checking it out just because why not? But yeah, I don't know. We got The Truth Versus Alex Jones, which is going to be on Max. That's obviously some sort of documentary about Alex Jones. We have Transition. We got Sperm World on Hulu. The film follows intimate encounters between off-brand sperm donors and recipients as they exchange more than just genetic material.
All right. Sure.
We have Powder Pup. This Powder looks like Pup. It's about a dog who skis, or maybe what? Snowboards. Looks like maybe snowboarding. Snowboarding pup.
Hell yeah! Oh my god! that body does not match that face of that dog.
Nope.
Not even close.
Nope. Not even close. We have The Beautiful Game on Netflix, the soccer, some sort of soccer film with, looks like Bill Nighy's in that. We have Polar Rescue, got Mad Props.
Mad Props.
I think it's a documentary about film props or something like that. We got Rest in Peace on Netflix. We got The Listener. We have The Lie, The Murder of Grace Mullane. Also on Netflix, we have Heart of the Hunter. Handle with Care, The Legend of the Nautic Streetball Crew.
The what?
The Nautic Streetball Crew.
The Nautic Streetball
Crew. Yeah, N-O-T-I-C. Streetball doc. The collective from Canada in the early 2000s.
Actually looks kind of interesting.
Yeah, it does. We have Finest Kind, We got Snow Valley. Got Lousy Carter. Got Sue Bird in the Clutch. Is that another basketball documentary? I believe it might be. Yeah. Follows the life of WNBA star Sue Bird. And then finally we have Light, which looks like it's a sci-fi one. Okay, on Blu-ray this week, we have Phase 4 from 1974. We got Spanish Bloodbath from 1974. We got The Playgirls and the Vampire from 1960. We have Five Card Stud from 1968. Primal Fear from 1996. Went out in 4K. Iron Claw. Got Amelie. Steelbook. Burial Ground. Burial Ground from 1981. Let's see. All Ladies Do It from 1993.
Every single one.
Every one of them. They Drive by Night from 1940. Closed Circuit from 1978. That one looks interesting. Got the Bounty Hunter trilogy. That's the When Evil Lurks is getting a Blu-ray release. Bubble Bath from 1980. Stand and Deliver from 1988. Man on the Brink from 1981. Sure, from 1980. North Dallas 40 from 1979. Going South. Media Book. 1978 on that one. Going South Media Book. Huh. Money Talks from 1997. Chris Tucker and Charlie Sheen. Dracula, Prisoner of Frankenstein from 1972. Night of the Blood Monster from 1970. Patrick. Yeah. Night of the Blood Monster? I'm not familiar with that.
I'm not either, but I like the sound of it.
Yeah.
Are you telling me there's a blood monster?
Yeah. Patrick, 1978. That's a classic. That's a horror classic right there. Australian horror classic, I believe. Where the Devil Roams. Zombie Army from 1991. Night Siren. Got The Crow Salvation from 2000. Simon Killer from 2012.
Simon Killer?
Yeah, haven't thought about that movie for a while. That was like one of the very first movies that we kind of like reviewed on here, and did we have the director on?
I think you had the director and Corbett, if I'm not mistaken.
I remember talking to Brady Corbett. Anyway, The Inspector Wears Skirts 2 from 1989. Snapshot from 1979. And I'm seeing a lot of stuff that I'm kind of interested in here. Good Burger 2, Everything to Entertain You, The Story of Video Headquarters. Blind Faith from 1989. There's so many. Holy crap.
Yeah, what is happening here?
And there's a ton of VOD stuff this week, too. All right, we'll call it there. What do we got on Criterion?
Trying to get a bunch of shit in before Easter, I guess.
Yeah.
God, who knew? Now we got two. We got Saint Omer from 2022, Alice Diop movie.
Mm-hmm.
Won a bunch of awards. And then To Die For from Gus Van Sant and Nicole Kidman, 1995.
We covered this on the 90s show a while back.
Yeah?
Yeah. That was okay.
Good stuff.
Decent little satire.
Oh, man.
All right, cool. Well, I think that's going to do it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. You can send us your questions and topics to podcast@filmpulse.net. If you could, consider giving us a review on iTunes. That'd be great. For Kevin Reichstrahl, my name's Adam Patterson. We'll see you next week. All right, let's talk about some spoilers for You'll Never Find Me. So basically, it's all in his head. That's the twist.
Which is the thing I have a problem with. I don't see this guy having issues with his conscience.
No, I mean, he seems like a monster, and it doesn't seem like...
Like, come on now.
Yeah.
Which means that she should know what's happening.
She should definitely know what's happening from the beginning. That's the thing. So that's the thing that I didn't really, that I was thinking about afterwards, is like, there's this whole scene where she's alone in, there's multiple scenes where she's alone trying to escape from the trailer, or, you know, she's like digging around trying to find information and stuff. And it's like, that doesn't make sense to me. Yeah, you know,
you're not
like,
real.
Why would we be spending time with her apart from him? Like, is he imagining her like digging through his stuff and trying to escape? And if so, like, where's he at during this? Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, those scenes in particular.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, that's where, like, and that's the stuff that I was talking about, where it's like, Once the reveal is there, and then you kind of go back, it's like, well, none of that makes sense, really. And, like, so it's like a fabrication in his mind. Why would he be fabricating or, like, daydreaming about her, like, rifling through stuff in another room? And then furthermore, like, he still has to best her in some way. But at the same time, like, he doesn't know who she is until, like, just... None of it works for me, for it being all in his head. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it just, and it was interesting because there was like her looking at like some of the knickknacks and stuff, and it was like, wow, she seems to know something. And then like the earring thing.
The earring,
like,
yeah.
Okay. It was like, well, shit, well, how'd that happen? Because like they've been together the whole time. Like, when did this happen? And I don't remember him being in the band.
Right.
And then it was like, oh, he still had to, like I said, he still had to best her in some way. It just didn't quite make sense.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't make sense, and I think that it's just kind of sloppy, the sloppy reveal. You know, it's like we've seen it so many times before. I mentioned High Tension. I mentioned. Or we like American Psycho is another one that's sort of done in the same vein.
Identity. Remember Identity?
I do remember Identity, yes. Unfortunately, I remember Identity. And of course, there's Fight Club, and there's so many other movies that deal with this whole thing where it's like, oh, it's all in his head.
And I just don't see him having that, like, crisis of conscience.
Well, I guess like, part of it is the drugs, like that whole thing. So I guess him taking the GHB is what brought it on. But I still agree with you that it doesn't. I don't know that in and of itself would be enough, because you would think that if it manifests itself like this, that he would have some sort of guilt. And I don't see it.
But man, everything up until then.
Yeah, so good. It's so great. Good. All right, so that's You'll Never Find Me on Shudder.